Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Again, this is On the Real with Dr. Deborah, Dr. Deb, and I am the family member that calls everybody to the kitchen table. And the only thing that I'm calling us to the table to talk about is racism in America. Today, I want to talk about the discomfort of racism. I use a metaphor of being unhealthy or sick. You know, something is bothering you. Some of us, we're afraid to find out what the doctor's going to say, so we just kind of ignore the pain until it gets unbearable. Then we go in, and many times we find out that if we had come in maybe even a day earlier, we could have prevented some things from happening. Sometimes some of us wait until the prognosis is just fatal, like you have 6 months to live, or you have 2 weeks to live, or you may not live to see tomorrow. And all you had to do was go in yesterday or last week or last month or when the pain first starts showing up, but you didn't. And then there are those of us who we are always in the doctor's office. Something is always wrong. And of course, we get there and the doctor says, there's nothing wrong with you. I don't understand why, blah, blah, blah. But you know something is wrong. I think both of those scenarios apply to racism in our country because there are some of us, and I might be somewhere between the two sick people, is that some of us are in denial about what's wrong, and then some of us are always talking about what's wrong. You might say I'm in the second camp, but I am not in the second camp just to be in there. I'm not going to the doctor just to go. I'm going because I know there's something wrong and there's something that can be done about it before it gets to that point where it's a fatal situation. That is my whole idea, my whole thought about talking about racism and dealing with it, is that we can be proactive and not reactive. And, of course, now another brother has been killed by the police officer, and I'm sure the Charlotte people thought that wouldn't happen in their community. I'm sure the people in Dallas thought that would never happen to them. I'm sure everybody was in some kind of denial about what is happening in our communities, and specifically our black versus our white communities. And I said it last time, I'll say it again. Everybody else on the color spectrum in between black and white, this affects you too, but this is the sore. Racism is the cancer. It is the illness that has plagued us way, way, way before we became the multicultural majority that we are today. And so when you think about what's happening between black and white people, don't feel discounted or ignored or neglected. Just get on either side and do what you can do to help change the way things are. Before I get going way too far, I would just like to let everybody know that this program is brought to you by Black University, Black Business University, where you can teach, learn, and get paid. Yes, go to www.blackuniversity.com and teach, learn, or get paid. All right. So back to our program. So we know this is going on because there are too many indications we're talking about: health disparities, educational disparity, wealth disparity, financial, just everyday middle classes, all these different disparities between blacks and whites let us know that there is something. Now, there are social scientists, people who have been looking at this for a while. They would call it institutionalized systemic racism, and I quite honestly would agree with them. And so I'm going to forever point to the problem, but I'm not just pointing to the problem just to point to it. I am bringing it up to invite you to do what you can do where you are to help solve the problem, to help cure the disease, because it is curable. But as I said in the title of our show, is maybe the pain is not great enough. Maybe the sore, because nobody can see it all the time, we're thinking that it's gone away, that everything is better now, even though there's nothing you have done to help make that better. you know, if I keep with this health or metaphor, there are some things that the body just needs time and it heals. And then there are some things the body needs attention for it to heal. In this case, our body, our family, we need attention. We need to give it the kind of nourishment, the positive nourishment, the conversations, the acts of anti-racism, the response for black people is the same. You know, we talk about white people being anti-racist, and we know that that's difficult for anybody who's in a privileged position to do. But if we recognize the discomfort, then we realize that it's necessary. And then so, well, black people are concerned, then what do you do? What can you do, begin to do to contribute to making it easier for our white brothers and sisters to join the anti-racist camp? So let me start right there, black people, what you can do. First of all, you guys, you know, and I'm stereotyping right here, but, you know, we think we're the only one who knows Jesus. We think we're the only one who love everybody. We think we're the only ones who are benevolent and kind and spiritual and considerate and all of that. So if I would say take that energy, take those belief systems, those attitudes of love and apply them. Imagine you were raised in a family and one of your brothers and sisters, for whatever reason, was favored by your mom or dad. Now, the child didn't ask for that. The child just was a recipient of that. And so you can't be mad at the child or your sibling for being favored. You can be upset with your parents for doing that to them and to y'all, but the child needs your love. That your brother or sister needs you to let them know that while you don't appreciate the privileges that they get, you do get that it wasn't their fault. And if it wasn't their fault, then treat them like it's not their fault. That applies to white privilege. You just do some reading. You know, I would just invite you. This is not sponsored by Hidden Colors, but you might want to look at those videos. There are things you can read. Du Bois, Mike Lewis Tyson, there are people you can read to give you an understanding for how you may proceed in dealing with the racist communities and environments you may find yourself in. So then I would say then to our white brothers and sisters, we talk about shame all the time. I've had too many teachers say, too many students say, I didn't own slaves, my people didn't own slaves, we weren't there, that happened a long time ago, and they feel really bad about it. Then I always invite them, and I'm inviting you, to think about what it's like to not be the privileged person, and to be, not only not be privileged, but to be disenfranchised. So now you are having to, group, in this case black people, have inherited this lower status in our culture, and they are upset about that. So then let's talk about this being a Christian nation, and more people go to church, believe in God and all that. So I invite then white people who have some sort of spirituality, whatever that is, and I'm stereotyping too, again, whatever that spirituality is, use that to try to understand why black people keep complaining. And again, look, I invite you to look at Hidden Colors 1, 2, 3, and 4 and get a better sense of where all this is coming from. So now both groups have some education, some idea based on this scenario I'm offering of how to deal with the racism that's in our country, that's, let's say, inside of both groups in one way or another. So be clear about that. One way and how it's affecting both groups. And then the task is to how do I be the kind of person that is empathic given the circumstances we all find ourselves in. Now, that's just the beginning of what it looks like in the workplace, in the community, in the grocery store, wherever you find yourself. That's the beginning. That's everyday people doing what they can do. But we know on a very larger systemic level, there are institutions, the educational institutions, the media companies, and that's in every sense, advertisers, movies, everything that's related to mass media. Then we've got the church. All of these major institutions have to call me, Dr. Deborah at Dr. Deborah Nixon, Dr. Deborah Nixon.com, if you need some consultation on how to begin to change the community where you live. And imagine this, and we say this all the time and everything. If everybody where they are decide they want to do something about this from an institutional level all the way to your community, your immediate, your neighbor, your friends, your family, if we all choose to do something that is anti-racist, that is not pro-racist, then what we would do is we create a community, a larger community, a family, a national community that is no longer comfortable with the status quo of black people complaining and white people being sick of it, black people protesting and white people wondering what's all a big fuss. Just, you know, get a job or go to school or just don't tear up stuff. You know, I thought about Dr. Martin Luther King. He spoke to looting back in the 60s, and he talked about how black people are so full of rage that is oftentimes what happens in protest, and so disenfranchised till it comes out in a way that is not doesn't seem productive, but it's definitely a part of a kind of a sense of really purging, if you will. And I would also add that a sense of you owe me. You owe me. I was speaking in a school a few weeks ago, university, and talking to some grad students, and one of the students in the class basically was questioning black people's why is it that this seems to be bigger than all the other issues that people have, you know, gays and Jews and handicapped. She started mentioning all these other marginalized communities. And I said, perhaps it's because there has never been any lasting, effective approach to dealing with what has happened to black people in this country. And until that happens, until the discomfort gets greater than what it actually is, you're going to keep seeing what you're seeing. You will continue to see what you're seeing because we have never really dealt with it. We've never really dealt with racism. We never really dealt with it in a way that is effective. A few programs here and there is just cosmetics, but it's not getting to the heart of what is really happening here and what is going on and how black people are just basically full of rage and anger and trying to fight just owning this second-class citizenry that we have been endowed with, if you will, just trying not to be that. So it is a constant discomfort in that community, and then therefore systemically it's a constant discomfort in our country, in our family, national community. And so the only way we can do something about this discomfort, I'm saying, is sit down at the kitchen table and talk about what is happening and, more importantly, what you can do to make this discomfort go away. And we're not talking just putting the Band-Aid over, because we know that doesn't work for a gash. It may work for a scar, a scrape, but it won't work for the gash that is in Oprah probably said the soul of our country, and that she wouldn't be too far from the truth. I'm kind of exaggerating, Oprah, sorry about that. But my point is, it's a large problem, and a small remedy just won't work. And so if we are truly interested in change, we will begin this process. Again, this show has been brought to you by Black Business University, where you can learn, teach, learn, and get paid. and On the Real with Dr. D. See you next time.